Okay, so now Sumit will speak about SSD and identity providers. Go ahead.
Thank you, Iker, and thank you for coming to my talk. So it's about SSD and identity providers, how they can work together. So this is also work in progress. So there are, I will show you later, there are some repositories where you can look at the code and get some packages, but it's not committed to the SSD upstream. So if you have ideas, suggestions, we are very welcome if you, will share with us, and so we can improve the experience with SSD and the integration with IDPs. My name is Sumit Bose, as Ike already mentioned. I'm a software engineer at Red Hat, and I'm, since I'm presenting for SSD, I'm a member of SSD team, but I'm also currently the maintainer of RealmD and ADCLI utilities to join Active Directory or FreeIPA. And maybe during the talk, we will see that even RealmD might play a role here in the future as well with the integration of the IDPs. So I will start telling you why we are doing this and how we are doing this. And in the end, I will try to do some demo. So this demo will be a live demo. So I will see how strongly I shoot myself into the foot. So, where we are coming from, I will talk about SSD. SSD is around since more than a decade, and it's basically about centralized identity management. So we are using sources like classical LDAP servers, maybe with a Kerberos server, or the more modern integrated variants like Active Directory and FreeIPA, where we get the user and group information and also use mostly the Kerberos protocol, but others as well, to authenticate the users against those centralized identity management platforms. And so SSD is on one hand getting the information from those servers, and on the other hand is sending the information back to the local system. So Leonard was already talking about PAM and NSS and SSH, for example. So what SSD is doing is taking the information from the identity provider, like the username, and put it into the NSS record that as the username. And when the server provides a UID and a GID, it will also put it into the NSS record so that the system knows what the UID and the primary group ID is corresponding to the name of the user. And then there are the remaining POSIX attributes like the home directory and the user shell. But as Leonard also mentioned before, there are many, many other information about the user. For example, the SSH keys of a user. And SSD also can, with the same mechanism as systemd and the Vowlink interface, present the user's SSH keys to the SSH daemon. And SSD can also do this with the host keys. And then there are other items where we can get information from the servers, like SUDO rules we can read from the server and make it available to the SUDO programs. So you can manage your SUDO rules centrally as well, AutoFS maps. And we also make this information available for the user, for example, via dbus. As Leonard also mentioned, originally systemd was also heavily using dbus. And at the time we started to provide the information via dbus, this was kind of state of the art. And so we used dbus to provide enriched user information. So as mentioned by Leonard as well, the POSIX NSS interface is quite small, where we do not can put many information. It's basically the information the systems need to log you in, but nothing else. And so we use the dbus interface to enrich this, and I guess we will also follow Leonard's suggestion or and implement a Vowlink interface sooner or later so that we nicely work together in this respect as well. But I'm told that not every system is using systemd, so I guess we have to maintain all the interfaces we currently have on our own as well. With respect to the integration of the local POSIX system, LDAP has this RFC 2307 or RFC 2307B schema, which defines all the attributes we need for a POSIX system. And Kerberos is something which is kind of quite old, coming from the mid-80s, is designed platform independent, but has a long tradition in the POSIX-UNIX environment, so that also these platform independence is handled quite well with the POSIX environment. So both sources we are so far using intensively for the centralized user management are very well integrated and well known. But the IDPs are kind of new for the POSIX environment, and I will later show you where we are kind of coming into trouble or where, what kind of obstacles we have to walk around. From the system side, I will just pick two of them because their relationship, in my opinion, is important. There's on one hand PAM for authentication, the pluggable authentication modules. On the other hand, the NSS, the name service switch by glibc, and they are independent by design. So you cannot look up a user which is not authenticated. And you, in theory, can authenticate a user who is at the point of authentication not known to the system. This contradicts each other. And typically, you have to kind of satisfy both. So for example, when you log in with SSH, SSH does a get pwnum call before doing any authentication. So the user must know to the system before authentication. And this is something which makes this integration with the IDPs a bit more complicated, because as you might have seen in some of the earlier talks, when you're doing ORDC authentication, in the end of the authentication, you get user information back as part of the authentication, but this is too late for us. We need it before. So this is some of the boundary conditions we have to consider here. So why we want to do this at all? Because, for example, there is already an integration with free IPA and IDP. So you can use free IPA to authenticate against an external IDP and use all the kind of fancy authentication methods your IDP provides. And using IPA has, in my opinion, also many benefits when you have a large environment. So when you have the knowledge and the manpower to handle a bit complex environment where you not only have your IDP, but also some other services like IPA. But even many small environments nowadays depend on the IDPs, because everything with related to web services and authentication is basically running on OAuth2 or ORDC IDPs. And so these IDPs are a kind of requirement even for small environments. And so with SSD, we are trying to fill the gap for those smaller environments so that you do not have to add extra complexity by adding new services, new protocols, but mainly have your IDP or run your IDP on your own, and then you can consume all the data you already have, like users, like groups, the relationships, group memberships, and so on, without any extra services which introduce complexity and maybe some other issues. So, and this is what we want to provide in future, so that SSD can talk with all the different kind of identity providers like EntraID, like TCloak, Google, you name it, Octra, Amazon, GitHub was already an example also in a previous talk. So this is something, or this is our goal, which we want to provide in future. And how we want to get there, or we want to follow, of course, the OIDC and OAuth2 standards because for the authentication and authorization, because this is what those IDPs provide, and this is also something we can build upon, because those are more or less pretty good standardized. A problem here, or what we have to respect as well, is that everything here is web browser based. So since it's coming from the web services and web service authentication and authorization, there has to be a web server involved. And you will ask yourself, when I do SSH, where is my web server? I hopefully will show you how it works in the demo later. As I already mentioned, OIDC provides you user identity tokens, but it is nice to have them, and we can take some information out of them, but typically they are coming too late because most of the services used to log in, like SSH, bin login, or whatever, do these get PWML. Try first if the user is known to the system before authenticating the users. The only exception I know is GDM. With GDM, you can just type in the name, and then GDM already immediately starts PAM without checking if the user exists or not. But yeah, this is so far the only example or counterexample I know. Then, what is also a bit of a problem is that although authentication is very much nicely standardized, looking up users and groups without the authentication part, as I mentioned, we have to do this, there is currently no standard at all. So basically, each provider has its own API for this. Luckily, more or less all of them are REST-based, so there is at least a kind of common ground. And most of them also have kind of similar ideas about how to look up a user or a group, so we can basically group this into some kind of requests against the IDP to look up those users' groups and their relationships. Another obstacle is that since IDPs so far were not used for POSIX integration or login into POSIX systems, there are typically no POSIX attributes, claims, or whatever we can kind of use to generate a UID or a login shell or a home directory. So we have to kind of find ways around this as well. And yeah, finally, to get this information from an IDP, and which is not part of the authentication of the user itself, we also need dedicated credentials to request a user and the user attributes or the memberships of a user from the IDP. Okay, how we are doing this? To get the information from the IDP, we have to create some kind of generic object, and in the IDP language, this would be a client. So like in typically a web application is a client, and so here we also create a client, which is kind of connected to the computer, so we can create credentials, typically a password, which we can store safely on the computer, and this the computer can use to connect to the IDP and then ask, does the user X or that exist, and does this user have group memberships, for example. For authentication, this client has to allow the device authorization grant, because this is kind of the only authentication flow which can be triggered without a web server. Sooner or later, we will need a web server, as I mentioned before, but the initial trigger can be done without a web server. And this client must be configured to allow user and group lookups as well. Basically, you can think about creating this client as joining a domain in the classical sense. And so here's where RealMD might come into play in future, so that we can simplify this, so that we do not have to create this client manually and give all the permissions to the client manually, but have some utility to do this automatically for you. Okay, as I already mentioned, an important step here, and also with the free IPA integration to the external IDP, is the device authorization grant, because we have to trigger this when the user is logging in, for example, with SSH, then the server side somehow has to trigger starting or initializing the authentication, because at this point in time, we do not have any kind of web server available. In future, graphical interfaces might integrate this. So there is a work in progress by different Linux vendors in this area. So at least on this level, when you initially log in to your computer with a graphical interface, there might be the possibility to have a minimal web browser so that you do not have to kind of get some extra steps. But the basic trigger will be the device authorization the device authorization grant as well. So SSD will do user and group lookups for you. We have the credentials to connect to the IDP with the help of the client ID and the client credentials. And as I mentioned before, most of them have some similar understanding about how to do this. So we will have a request to look up a user, we will have a request to look up the groups, and then we will have requests to look up the members of the groups and the memberships of a user. And since all of the IDPs will are doing this differently and have some different APIs, we will kind of try to provide a plugin interface so that it is easily to extend when there is a new IDP coming around and has some additional API. Currently, what we have in code is interfaces for Entra ID and for KeyClock. And yeah, if the demo works, I will show you how it's working with KeyClock. As I mentioned, IDPs typically do not have POSIX attributes as claims or whatever stored. So we have to make them up on our own. And this is basically not new to us because SSD is connected to, or can connect to Active Directory. And as you might know, when you have a default Active Directory installation, there is also no POSIX ID, no home directory, and so on. There are a couple of extensions which are added by Microsoft way back in time and currently are kind of only existing in the LDAP schema. But there are no tools anymore to manage them. Nevertheless, we were used to this, so there are already SSD options to provide a default shell, so if the user entry does not have a shell, this shell will be provided. We also have some kind of templates to generate home directories based on the username, so like default slash home slash and then the username. So those we do not need. And also for Active Directory, we added some ID mapping so that we have it, when we have an Active Directory user or a group, we can generate an ID for this. And this is not only just kind of making up a number, but we try to do this algorithmically so that when you have two different systems joined to the same Active Directory domain, they generate the same UID and the same GID or primary GID for the user without having interaction between each other. And how we do this is basically we take the SID of an Active Directory object, be it a user or a group, take the domain SID part, which defines us some range, and then take the RID part, so it's the last part, the last number of the SID, which is counted upwards by Active Directory, so we use this as a kind of offset. So for example, we pick a range for IDs starting with 1 million, and then we add the width 2030 to this, and this will give us the POSIX ID 1,000,000,2030. And this will work on all the systems connected to Active Directory, so all the client systems will have the same UID, GID, and so on. I hope that the stronger use of IDPs, we sooner or later will also have some kind of ideas how to define some POSIX standards in the IDP world so that those attributes will be available or can be easily set in IDPs as well. This would make life easier, but as of now, we have to generate them on our own. I described how we mapped the POSIX IDs for Active Directory, and we will pick, or have here for the example, pick a similar scheme for the IDP. We do not have a domain set for the IDP, but something which is unique and also available for all IDPs would, for example, be the token URL. It has to be accessible in the web, it has to be kind of unique, and since every token has to be requested via this endpoint, it is also always present with IDP. So this is, for example, one thing we can use as a kind of identifier for the IDP and to select the range. There are, of course, depending on the IDP, other ways to collect to select the range. For example, with Android ID, you have your tenant ID. This is, of course, the tenant ID is part of the token URL, but you can also restrict on this tenant ID if you're only working with Android ID, for example. So this will most probably be configurable over the time for the different providers, but kind of the default might be the token URL. So this selects as a range. For example, they are starting from 1 million to 2 million, or 1 million and to 1 million and 200,000, which is typically our default size of ranges. And then, unfortunately, there's no such nice number as the written Active Directory, which is counted up by an IDP, at least not generically. Typically, the objects and IDPs have some UUIDs also, which are kind of have no structure at all. So we cannot use this. So as a first step, we are using another hash, and this is the hash of the username, which is kind of unique for the user as well. And this then defines as a UID or a number inside of the range we have selected. There's one kind of severe problem with this. As you know, hashes are not revertible. So it is with this scheme, it is easy to get a UID or a GID if I know the username or the group name. And of course, SSD will cache this, and then we can, of course, find for a given ID the user back. But if we do not have the cache and start just with the ID, we kind of cannot find the user. So this is a kind of drawback of this scheme. And depending on the IDP, if there is some upcounting number, it might, of course, be better to use this. But this is the hash of the name is kind of will kind of work for all with the restriction that it's not revertible or invertible. Okay, now coming to the demo. First, if you want to try this at home, as I mentioned before, there is a copper repository with a couple of packages for recent Fedora and RHEL version and maybe some other platforms, where you can download the packages. At this repository, there are also kind of configuration instructions, and you also find links to my current working Git trees if you want to compile it on your own on some other platforms. For the testing, if you do not want to kind of mess with your system, I do using the SSD CI test containers. These are containers we are using inside of SSD to run our test scripts. So they make it easy to set up containers with a SSD client, an IPA server, a Samba AD domain controller, as Active Directory server, an LDAP server, a Kerberos server, and so on. And there's also nowadays a Keyclock server available. So we have an IDP, we have a client, and so we can use this for testing. Here, I also put the configuration in the slides. I do not know how familiar you are with the SSD configuration, but basically there is a new ID provider called IDP, which has options on its own, basically defining the IDP endpoints and so on. Okay, now let's switch to my client. Okay, first let me stop SSD. Okay. So just as a proof, so now currently if SSD is not running, the system does not do the user 01 at Keyclock. So this is my configuration. It is basically the same as on the slide. There are some generic blocks for SSD. And here on the ground you see we replace the shell with bash and have a template for the home directory. And okay, let's start again. Or maybe we have a look at the Keyclock server first. So as I mentioned, we need a client on the Keycloak side. I already have prepared a client. Oh, session timeout. Okay, and as you see, I allow client authentication, so the client can authenticate with the help of a password. I allow device key authorization, and service account roles means I have assigned some roles to the client, basically to allow them to look up users and groups. And I have some users here, user 01, user 02. Going back, so I started SSD. I remove logs and I remove the cache at all as well, so to be sure there is no kind of object already stored on the system in the cache, and then I call. Okay, so now the user is present on the system. I prefer a fully qualified name, so the username is user01 at Keycloak. This might become important when you have multiple different IDPs, because SSD allows by design to configure multiple domains or sources. When you collect from multiple IDPs, there is a fair chance that you have a collision of usernames. This is typical, for example, in Active Directory environments where all domain, every domain has an administrator user and the domain users group, so you have to use fully qualified names in those environments to not confuse you and the system. And you see the user has a UID and a primary GID, so we by default use user private groups, so the numerical value of the primary group will be the same, and it has also auto-generate home directory and the shell. There was a second user, user 02. It is here as well. And you can see the IDs are kind of coming from the same range, but differs. So, and yeah, this is of course important that we have different UIDs and GIDs for all the users. Okay, next step, authentication. And so I will SSH just onto the local host. And here you can see what device authorization means, because you are getting a prompt back that you should connect to a URL and then even type in some authorization code. But Keycloak is so nice also presenting a URL where you have both in one, so you do not have to type the code on your own. And so I open this URL and it say, okay, I'm successfully logged in. So I'm going back to my shell and press enter. And now I should be able to log in, but it fails. Why does it fail? It's because of the browser. I've shown you some details of the Keycloak configuration and I'm still logged in as admin and not as user 01. So the browser, since it's caching all this information, is still thinking I want to log in as user, as administrator, but on the other hand, I want to log in as user 01. So this is already the example that you kind of cannot trick out the system. So you really have to be logged in as, there's a logout button, sign out, okay. Closing the windows. Okay, now I use the new key. Okay, now I'm asked to log in because I'm not logged in at all. So I'm asking again if I want to allow the access. Okay. Successfully logged in on the IDP. And now I'm also successfully logged in to the local system. Okay, demo worked. That was basically what I wanted to show you. Thank you very much for your attention. And as I mentioned, this is work in progress. If you have suggestions, just send me an email, or there's also a GitHub issue about this topic where there's already some discussion happening. If you have a question about what about Android, what about Keycloak with some details, or if you want to have insight of some of the other IDPs, feel free to reach out to me or send some comments to the GitHub. Thank you very much.
So we don't have time for questions. Can the next speaker come? We don't have time for questions, sorry.
Maybe it's better if you go with him and answer his question.
Okay. Time is running out, you mean? Yeah, okay.
UIDs of the users you import,
yeah,
are they systematic? Like, can you, if you import them in a different way, can somebody get access to files created by that associated to that UID?
You will need to remove the mic.
Yep.